Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Manhattan. Brooklyn. The Bronx. Staten Island. Queens. Westchester, Connecticut, Jersey. July 26th, it's The Real, are headlining our own live podcast at the Highline Ballroom. Tickets go on sale. Tickets are on sale right now at itsthereal.com. if you guys enjoy the podcast, and I think a lot of you do based on the numbers and all the feedback that we've been getting.
Yeah, if you keep coming back, come see us in person.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Go to the Highline Ballroom, July 26th, New York City.
Yeah.
Tickets are on sale at
It's The
Real.
Even if you're not from any of those places, we welcome you to our city, New York City, July 26th, Highline Ballroom. It's The Real, a waste of time live. Jeff, how was our week?
Our week was good. I'm glad that I get to decide.
Yes.
It was our week was okay. Good. Right. We saw the rapper Casanova about 45 times. So that was fine. That was good.
Does that say more about him or about us?
I feel like we're in the right rooms. He's probably wondering
what we're doing there.
Yeah.
No, he's always warm. It's nice to see him.
We saw him at the went to Playboi Carti's video shoot for Magnolia.
Whenever we tell people this, we're like, oh, we were at the Magnolia thing the other day, and everyone's like, oh, Magnolia Bakery. No. This is at One Oak, and it was a video shoot
in New York. I'm Billy Rock.
Yeah,
get cupcakes in my sock, all that.
Pierre was there.
Yo, Pierre.
Bunch of people were there. Joel Santana, ASAP Rocky, Highbridge guys, right?
A Boogie with the Hoodie.
And Don Q. Murder Beats we saw there.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the room.
I feel like we're missing a bunch of people.
But they were like, it's The Real. We need you there. And we've been to these video shoots before where it's like, yo, we need you guys to be front and center.
And then it turns out when they say need,
it's like, you know, optional.
All right, we need ASAP Rocky over here with like a harem of beautiful girls.
Right. And then
somehow we didn't fit into that.
They don't need the
We didn't fit into the vision.
Cameo.
Yeah.
So we were ready to Millie Rock though.
Yeah.
On
Real Sturdy.
Yes. Anyway, we saw Casanova there.
Yep.
We saw him at the 2 Chainz listening at Up and Down. We went to two Chainz listenings this week.
Right. The first one got shut down by the fire marshal, which was a surprise.
I mean, it was especially for Def Jam employees who couldn't even get in the building. We were in there, and we were on the inside looking out. 2 Chainz couldn't even get in.
Not for real, for real.
We did see him, so that was nice. Then we went the next night to the rescheduled listening party at Up and Down.
Yeah, at a place that the fire marshal did not come into.
Casanova was there.
Yeah.
Again. And then we did the Vibe.
Yeah, it was the Fresh Pack Tour.
The Fresh Pack Tour. Gramercy Theater. We showed up on time. Which was like
dumb.
Yeah, just a mistake on our part because
but we were opening up.
So the Fresh Pack Tour, Casanova was the headliner.
And it was about 30 rappers before him. All of them were from the Bronx. And then there was us.
Also, shout out to It's Biscuit, who was hosting.
Who said that we were from South Bronx.
He gets on stage to introduce us.
And says, my guy's from the South Bronx.
We have to get on stage and correct him. Like, you know, come on, guy.
But I feel like we're not from South Bronx. We're from the south of Bronx.
Shout out to everybody who recognized us, who called out It's The Real from the audience. People had a great reaction. Everyone should go make sure to listen to Teddy Bear Fresh on all streaming services. Our debut album, Teddy Bear Fresh, featuring Currency and Smoke Dizza on this song called Sugar High, which is really, really, really taking off on Spotify. Go check that out on Spotify, Apple Music, Pandora, SoundCloud, YouTube. Am I missing anything else?
Yeah, you're missing Google Play because that one guy in the comments is going to get mad at you.
And Amazon Music, I think that's the thing, right? It's The Real, Teddy Bear Fresh. Go stream that. Let us know what you think. I did want to take a second to acknowledge a guy from this industry who a lot of us knew. He was very close to Jadakiss. His name was Jay Jackson, more commonly known as Ice Pick. A really great guy, a really tenured guy in this business, and a guy that a lot of people leaned on. And
I mean, everybody from the Rough Riders.
Yeah, Rough Riders, D-Block, a lot of Def Jam people. Star Trek, Pharrell was, you know, his boss for a while. Jay in Philadelphia. We saw Jay all around New York.
Orlando.
A really great guy, gone too soon from cancer.
You know, Swizz Beatz wrote really nice posts.
Clark Kent.
Just a ton of people. And you know, we just wanted to add our thoughts to that as well.
Yeah.
Much love to him and his family.
Yeah,
and
a
his
wonderful
friends.
Guy who will not be forgotten. If you don't know about Ice Pick, do your research. Go find out. You know, there's a lot of people who go unnoticed. We like to put those type of people on this podcast. Jay would have been an excellent one. Rest in peace to Ice Pick, Jay Jackson. Today we have Irv Benitez on the podcast, the creator and force behind Brunch Bounce and The Greatest Day Ever.
Yeah, we talked to him about growing up in Queens and wanting to be part of the music industry in a big way. You know, growing up listening to Jay-Z and Nas and ending up working at Foot Locker, which is not part of the music industry, but he does meet Just Blaze in a hilarious way.
And then he gets an internship at Rockefeller Records. He turns that into touring the country on a Segway. He turns that into working at a bank. He turns that into creating Brunch Bounce out of this tiny party that no one else was doing. And he has turned Brunch Bounce into this big sort of festival every summer called The Greatest Day Ever.
Yeah, which is actually 2 days, so it's The Greatest Days Ever.
That's right. It is like a carnival setting, as in they have rides, they have huge guests, they have great DJs, Diplo, Dylan Francis, DJ Esco, Kyle, Post Malone, The Internet, Tunji Ige, Westside Gunn Conway, and a bunch more that haven't been named yet.
Among other things, we are giving away 2 tickets, 2 weekend passes, July 15th and 16th, to
The Greatest Day Ever.
If you go on Twitter and you shout out It's the Real and Greatest Day Ever, we will pick a winner from that.
It's going down July 15th and 16th in the Bronx, New York City. If you can't get the 2 free tickets that we can give away, go to thegreatestdayever.com and get your tickets right now. Also, July 26th.
Yeah, we are going to be on stage doing our live podcast. We're going to have a bunch of guests.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going down July 26th, Highline Ballroom, and you can get your tickets at itsthereal.com. Jeff, when do you want to get into this podcast?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Push and Drops, a.k.a. Vizine.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Ancient Sweet, a.k.a. Diabetes.
Yo, it's Irv, a.k.a. Yo, I can't get it.
Hey, Irv's here. Yo, this is a waste of time, but it's The Real. Irv, what's happening?
What's happening? What's happening?
How are you? How are you dealing with the heat out here?
Yeah, man, I love this shit, man.
Yeah?
Amazing. I fucking love it.
Are you the type to go down to the subway and just, like, it's, like, 120 degrees down there?
What, treat it like a sauna?
And you're good.
Nah, I mean, I don't complain about it. I just like, become one with the heat.
Oh, no.
That's so zen. Dumb.
That's the only way that you can actually get through it. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody just complains about it and everything, but I fucking love this shit.
You're a New Yorker born and raised.
Born and raised.
What'd you do during the blackout? Like, what was that, 2006?
Oh, three?
Or was it that early?
1979?
That's right, yeah.
So, 1979. I was working at AT&T Wireless right before they merged with Singular. Mm-hmm. It was on 53rd and 7th. And I remember I had stepped out for lunch. And I was like, I was going to go pick up a video game from Toys R Us in Times Square.
Yeah.
The blackout happened. And it was fucking hilarious to me because, like, all these, like, tourists were, like, stuck on the Ferris wheel in Toys R Us. They didn't know what the fuck was going on. And I'm like, man, I could really just jet out of here with as many video games as I want. The alarms would not go off.
Oh, my God.
But at that point, nobody knew, obviously, that it was, like, a blackout.
Yeah,
like,
but if you did that, you would have had a real long walk back home.
Oh, for sure, 100%. But then, so then I walked back to the office. And
how many video games did you have?
I didn't buy it, obviously, and I didn't.
It's fine. There's this statute limitations and stuff, but you can talk about it.
So after that, I went back to the office. They were like, you know, your bag's gonna have to stay here. Obviously, I'm not going back up to like the 28th floor. Or whatever. And I had to walk from 53rd and 7th. I walked to the 59th Street Bridge. People were being cool and, like, you know, if they had like a pickup truck or something, like, people were just getting on the back or whatever.
Wow.
And I managed to get on somebody's pickup truck across the bridge, and then I got off and walked from the 59th Street Bridge on the Queens side all the way damn near to LaGuardia Airport.
Holy Jesus. Shit.
It was insane. It was crazy.
You're from Queens.
Yes.
Where in Queens?
Born in Corona, moved to Jackson Heights, lived in Jackson Heights till I was like 12, 13, then moved to East Elmhurst.
So Queens, like, for your whole,
like, literally, grew up, I could have walked from, like, 3-4 blocks to LaGuardia Airport.
Did you have a favorite Queens rapper?
I mean, Nas.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. No real feeling about
obviously,
it.
Obviously, you know, super, like, you know, Nas, Mobb Deep, you know, enjoyed Kool G Rap. You know,
man, no love for LL.
LL, of course. Yeah. I mean, and now just like Bronson is just like
right.
the god.
But do you grow up where like everybody is like, yo, like these guys grew up, you know, from this section of Queens or that section of Queens, so we got to listen to them and rock to them and the whole thing?
You know what's funny? Play from Kid and Play
right.
had a barbershop out there. And I remember like I was a kid and like, I was getting a haircut and like my chair spun and like spun in his direct. It was him like next to me and I was like, oh shit, it's
that's dope.
Play.
That's
like, awesome. Did you tap your feet to him?
No. But going back into like the history, like Eric B is from around there, Malcolm X, Salt and Pepper.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm X did not rap.
He did not rap, but from East Elmhurst, I think that's if I'm not mistaken, that's the house that they like fucked up.
Oh whoa, whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I'm almost certain.
Before you got real serious there, yes. I was going to make a joke about Malcolm X getting a record deal by any means necessary.
Nice.
Sam wasn't there? Nah, I wasn't there, but he did live there at some point. He's at any means necessary. Yeah.
So it's you and you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have a brother. We're 13 months apart.
Younger?
Yeah.
Your first job was where?
Where the fuck did I work? My mom, my first job ever was handing out flyers like for a furniture store like on Queens Boulevard.
Wait, promoting?
No.
Yeah. No, what do you know? Yeah.
Essence, right? Like, come get this fucking convertible sofa or whatever.
Yo, party at Filene's tonight.
So you see coming to America where, like, McDowell's is?
Yeah.
That's Queens Boulevard.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
like, up and down, like, Queens Boulevard.
Damn.
Standing out furniture store flyers or whatever.
That How'd you do?
First job. Dude, I used to dump them shits in a fucking sewer.
No.
And
no.
go play basketball.
No.
Pretty much.
So you were killing it.
Killing it.
Yeah. Yep. You got the word out.
I got it out.
But graduating college, you end up working for AT&T.
Yeah, graduating college, worked for AT&T Wireless before they merged with Singular. Then they merged with Singular. Lost my job.
But was that where you saw your life going? Like in total?
No.
Yeah. Like, what did you want to do?
I wanted to work in the music industry, like for sure. I interned twice for Rockefeller.
Twice.
Yeah.
Why twice?
Well, two semesters.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, okay. Two different people, two different departments.
Like, yeah. It wasn't like things, you were just like you know fired in a terrible way, and then you came back with like a mustache.
Not at all, man. It was crazy the way I got the internship too. I was working at Foot Locker on 34th Street, and I had one. A two-way pager, a SkyTel from Hot 97.
Okay.
And, dude, the shit wasn't even connected. I just had it, right? And
it's a doorstop.
Yeah, yeah. So
wait, how many times did you call up to get that that pager?
Yo, I figured out how to win them. Like, I figured out how to,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, you know somebody. You know one of the DJs. That's how you win.
No, there was just a pattern to the contest. Like, they announced them at, like, within the first 10 minutes of the hour, and then you just have to call, like, you know, like, at the 20-minute mark around there, right before.
Wait, do you
right
believe that there's
it.
Really...
I mean, I don't know anymore.
97 callers that
yeah
really
for sure
yeah
they have those definitely. Things definitely. They have the not routers. I don't know what the word
well,
is.
I don't know
you
if
work at AT&T you tell me.
I only know because I figured out the pattern, and there was a lot of times where it was like 93 and I was 96. I'm like, fuck, you know what I mean?
But just, you won them. You won it.
I won twice on Hot 97.
Twice. Wait. Yeah. The pager?
The pager, and I won the
Summer Jam tickets?
Did I win Summer Jam? No, I didn't
win. Did you win a trip to Hot Night Jamaica?
I wish. It was like they were giving away 97 keys, and you get to put them into the engine of like a Hummer. Like my Hummers were like popping, and if it turns on, it's yours. I just wanted it to sell it.
Oh,
I wanted to sell it and buy a
smart
house.
Smart man.
You're
going to
flip keys.
Yeah.
They were like 75 brand or something
for
like
sure.
that. It works.
Jay-Z also, lost 97 keys.
Yeah, he did.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Also, that's a lot of gas money right there. It so is. Why would anyone want to have that anyway? 100%. I had a college roommate who after college bought an Expedition and then like, you know, had it when the economy turned, and it was just like, yo, that's
yeah, what do you
terrible,
do with that?
Terrible thing.
Bad investment. You could live just, in it.
You could
live
in you it. Could. There you go. Smart.
It's not a Pontiac Aztec, but you could certainly live in it.
So you're working at Foot Locker.
Yeah, I was working at Foot Locker, and this dude comes in, and I noticed that he had the pager, so I just kind of struck up a conversation with him, just unrelated to sneakers or whatever. And we're just talking about the pager, just, you know, having regular convo.
Pager talk.
Pager talk, you know? And... he was telling me, I was like, yo, so what do you do? He was like, oh, I work in the music industry. I'm a producer, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, oh, that's dope. I'm actually looking to get into the music industry, man. And he was like, oh, word? He was like, yo, I could probably hook you up with an internship. I said, all right, cool. And he was like, let me get your math. And I'm like, my shit ain't even connected. But let me get yours, yeah. You know, whatever, and I'll hit you up. And it turned out that it was Just Blaze.
Holy shit.
Yeah, before Blueprint.
Holy. Before the Lamborghini. Before that. Yeah.
Long, I remember it was like FOB Entertainment or something like
long
that.
Long braids and...
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Yeah.
Do you remember what kind of shoes he was picking up?
I don't remember. Probably Air Force Ones or something like that. Like everybody would come in, like Fat Joe, Jadakiss, everybody would come in for like... And come out with like boxes. Like,
yeah.
Like...
Sneaker shopping.
20, yeah. 25 boxes of like Air Force Ones.
Wait, was the power out?
No.
Okay, so they weren't stealing.
So wait, you got Just Blaze's information and
He got me an internship.
He got it for you.
Yeah. At Rockefeller.
Crazy.
Which is crazy.
So
I tell him about it now and he says he remembers, but I don't think. But I said thank you eventually.
First day of your internship, you go into 825 Worldwide Plaza.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
What are you wearing?
I forgot.
Air Force Ones?
I have absolutely
nothing. Like, got your pager hooked up?
That shit, that time was like a blur, to be honest with you. Like, I remember, obviously, going up there. I don't even remember what I was doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah,
like, I honestly do not remember because I was just, like, happy to be there.
Sure.
And super, like, in awe. And
you had no music business experience prior to that?
None except reading some books and Source and Double XL back, like, front to back.
Yeah.
That's it. You know?
Yeah,
I was just a super fan. I was just like, you know... just very much into music. I literally listen to not just hip hop, but like everything, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, like everything. And I was like, man, I think I have like a good ear. I could be an A&R, something like that.
How many drugs were you doing when you were listening to Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin?
None at all, man. To be honest, like I have some like not crazy, but just like the stupidest like drug stories. Like I'm not a weed guy.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't do shit. Like I remember one time, went to my friend's house, and we were all playing like video games, and we started watching a movie, smoking one blunt, smoking the next blunt, and I literally just like fell asleep. So they thought it would be funny as hell. Like I told them, I said, "Yo, you know, I gotta be home at a certain time, whatever." So after we smoked, I fell asleep, and these guys, I found out afterwards, I wake up and it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night or whatever. The shades are like it's dark. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? I'm like, yo, what time is it? And they're like, yo, it's 9:30. I'm like, oh fuck, I gotta get out of here. And I run for the door and I open the door and it's daylight outside.
Oh shit.
I come back to the room, they're cracking the fuck up. They forwarded the clocks, they drew the shade. That shit was so fucking funny, man. It was hilarious, man. But yeah, I'm not a big weed person, like here and there recreationally, but nothing crazy.
So Rockefeller Records, what time period are we talking right here?
It was, I mean, I remember like
in Blueprints. Would you say what is it? Blueprint 1, Blueprint 2?
I think it was between when did like all the state property stuff happen, because they were like it was between 1 and 2, no? Or after 2?
I think it was around 1.
So like 2001, okay,
around,
I think.
So around that time, like when state property, like because I remember Freeway and Beanie's
come to crazy.
And all that stuff. So.
Were they in good moods?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Good.
It's always super like fun and like jovial up there. Everybody's always in a good mood. Like, just
that's a good Rockefeller
like,
time.
Laughing yeah. at like how fucking rich they were. Like,
yeah.
Just like you know.
Did you see Dame? Did you see Jay?
Yeah, Dame, his brother,
Bobby Dash. Yeah, Bobby Digital Dash.
Bobby, Shaka was there. A whole bunch of people.
And how many pairs of Pro Keds did you get?
I honestly didn't ask for anything. All I ever asked for was Jay's autograph, and that's it.
And did you get it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally. Yeah, that could have gone in two ways.
Yeah, 100%. Nah, he was totally chill about it, you know. And I just like, you know, just thanked them for like reasonable doubt. Like I like listened to that shit like front to back like a million times. You know what I'm saying? It just, I don't know. For me, it was motivational, not like in the sense that you would think. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, just
by the way,
it
just
was aspirational.
Yeah. Yeah. To flash forward a little bit. What'd you do when the Jay and Nas beef happened?
Yes. This is a very good question.
You're a Queens guy.
I know. I felt torn. Like I felt
I
like,
bet.
I felt like, man, I was definitely like super like Jay-Z stan or whatever, but also like Nas is like, yo, it's Nas. You can't come on, it's Nas. So I kind of felt like things went off the deep end with the whole
super ugly
with Jay-Z.
That'll do it.
Yeah, super ugly. You know what was funny, there was a contest they were running, and they were they were giving away a jersey or something like that. So I was supposed to go to Genesis and buy a jersey to give away to the winner.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to get an Iverson jersey. For those that don't know, if you know, you know. If you don't know, you know.
Was that why your first internship
was like,
ended?
So I called over there and I was like, yo, so they got Iverson. I'm going to pick that up. They're like, no.
What happened between your first internship with Rockefeller and your second?
It was just in school. They were back to back. It was like from, did one in the fall, took some time off, did one in the spring.
Gotcha.
Just different.
Did they remember you when you came back?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I went back, I worked for like new, what they called new media marketing, working with like with John Bartleson.
John Bartleson.
Trying to work
That's
on
right.
like affiliate marketing and shit like that.
Meaning what?
They were trying to find partners to just, you know, leverage and do cool shit with, really, and put their content, their like albums on, like,
right.
hey, put banners on this site, that site, whatever. It was like that kind of thing.
And at the time, you're going to Baruch College?
Yes, sir. Yep.
How was that?
Baruch was awesome. I remember when I first went there, it was when the campus was more spread out. Like, there was a building on like 18th Street, 23rd Street, 28th Street. You had 25 minutes to get from like building to building. Like, if you had a dope schedule if you were like on 23rd and 18th.
Yeah.
But I remember one semester I had a schedule that was like 28th, 18th, 28th, 23rd.
Oh man.
Back, it was
you needed a Fitbit.
Insane. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It was a full-fledged workout, but it was cool though. I was across the street from the Source. Like the Source office.
Yeah.
So whenever I'd see the magazine on the stands, I would just run up there and be like, yo, what the fuck? Like, you can't find this shit. Where is it? And they're like, all right, man, here, just take one, dog. It's cool.
You're in school studying what?
Corporate communications.
And could you apply any of that to your internship or vice versa?
Well, I think it was, I took corporate communications for two reasons. One, I had an interest in marketing, advertising, PR, all that stuff. And I thought that corporate communications was the broader one that can kind of apply to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And also because it, the type of degree it was, you didn't have to take like all these insane math classes. Like, I hate math. So
yeah.
I just took Cal and I was pre-Cal and Cal and I was just done with
Got
it.
Got through.
But otherwise, you would have to take, I would have had to take a bunch of math classes and I wanted no parts. I almost got kicked out because of math, like all types of shit. So my first semester, my father passed away. That was super tough. And then like, you know, all these Cal classes were like killing me or whatever, and my GPA got super low. I mean, I was, you know, obviously sad about my dad and just like a change in my life where I had to like work full time now, help pay tuition, like all that stuff. So I was working full time, going to school full time.
Yeah.
And my grades were like suffering, you know, especially because of like, because of math. And nobody told, like, I didn't, you know, when you first go, it's like a newfound freedom. So like, nobody told me about like dropping classes and this and that. I'm like, well, if I don't show up, teachers will just like get the memo. Like, you know,
right.
they'll drop me.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand that if they drop you, you know, you get an F. If you drop out, it's like a
Were
W.
Were you living on campus or are you no, living back at home?
Commuting. Like, even like to this day, like, I don't know anybody from college. Like,
wow.
I couldn't tell you one person. It was.
I don't know anybody from your college either.
Well, it was just in and out. Like, and that's pretty much like the pace of the school. Like, if you were to go now and just stand on the corner, people just like come and go and come and go, and everybody looks like, you know, they just got somewhere to be.
And your dad died.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you have to lean on besides your family? Like, where are your friends from home? Your like rock?
Yeah. I have. You know, we had I want to say like two really close friends that I've known pretty much all my life or whatever, and just all super supportive. I had a girlfriend at the time that I was with for a long time, so it was, you know, as okay as it could be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then my mom, more than anything, was like super, my mom and my brother, but my mom was like super supportive. Like, I didn't have to like lie to her or anything. Like, I told her straight up, like, yo, my GPA is like fucked up. I'm gonna get kicked out, whatever, whatever. And she just encouraged me. It was like, you know, listen, you can do this. Just go talk to a counselor, see if there's any like workaround or whatever. And I wish I remembered the counselor's name, but she figured out like a loophole and she was like, hey, look, you know, the grades aren't out yet. So just in case, you know, your GPA comes back in low again, so go register for, you know, the math class, take it. If you get a C or better, it'll drop all your, you know, whatever your previous, you know, F's were.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. So I registered for the class, and I just applied myself fine. I was like, all right, cool. Let me just do this and get out the way. I got an A minus, and like I was like, all right. From that, that was like the turning point.
You got an A minus in math.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was like, okay,
not so
cool.
Terrible.
Yeah. That's
so,
yeah. Fuck math.
So after
yeah, you
that,
love math now.
Yeah. After, well, no, I was just after that. I was just like, all right. Well, that was the most challenging class I've taken. So if I got an A minus in that, I can, you know, just kill it with everything else. So I was like, all right, let me just apply myself now. And I think that, you know, once you step into like that junior year where you actually start taking classes that you're interested in,
right?
You know, it just kind of all clicks and makes sense. So,
and then outside of like school, you know, you love rap. Where were you going out?
Man, I was more going to clubs and stuff like that. I never went
what
to
clubs?
Like, the Tunnel or anything like that. But like, I actually started partying like uptown, like more Latin clubs than anything else. So
a lot of freestyle.
No, actually a lot of like just, you know, typical merengue, bachata, all that stuff, you know? Yeah, partying in Washington Heights and in Queens.
I love how you'll go wherever for a party.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean,
far uptown.
I went to like a couple of the summer, like I was at the Summer Jam with the Summer Jam screen, obviously, where that was like born or whatever.
Yeah.
When Michael Jackson came out and all that stuff. Went to a couple of Summer Jams. But I don't remember like going to like, yo, I saw Biggie at like the Garden.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, I saw Biggie in a basement.
Yeah. When you graduate college and you're going to have a corporate communications degree and you end up working for AT&T, are you using your corporate communications?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, so what I was doing for them, they were basically working on all the shit then that we're able to do now. So I was doing a lot of like field research and just writing up reports and stuff like that on just the things that people wanted to be able to do with their phones. Like we used to go to not only survey people in the street, but like talk to reps at the stores and say, hey, what are your customers asking you for? Yada, yada. And it was, people were like, hey, I'd love to buy a movie ticket on my phone. And I'm like,
Good luck, my friend.
Never happened.
Yeah.
You
like,
idiot. Yeah,
I want to make dinner reservations and like all types of shit. And I'm just like, we're all like fucking playing reversey.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. On our phones or whatever. And I'm like, all right, cool. That sounds like some Back to the Future shit, you know? But so I would write up those reports and stuff like that.
What kind of phone did you have at the time?
Nextel.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Well, were you the guy who could, like, text on your phone, like, while not looking, like, while you're driving, you just know from the, like...
Not even, man. Like, not. I was more than anything. I mean, it was, like, limited, right? The amount of stuff you could do on that shit.
Yeah.
And it was kind of annoying. Just, like, you have to press... to get to the letter like times or whatever. It's like
I just remember like Nextels being like they always felt like a trucker. You know, like
that's what everybody wanted though. Those commercials were very, very effective.
First one was huge, man. That shit was massive. But then as they started to get smaller, they got cooler, and then after Nextels, well, with Blackberries and Sidekicks and
I signed all my emails with a sent for Motorola Razr tag, and people like really have a soft spot for Razrs in 2017, and I don't know why. Like, it's obviously a joke. Like, I have an iPhone, but, like, I didn't love Nextels at the time, but now I love Nextels.
Are you going to switch up your signature?
StarTAC.
I would switch it up to a Nextel. That's a good idea. I'm going to do that. So
hanging up a StarTAC was very, like... therapeutic though.
What do you mean?
Like when you just like that click that snap was like fuck you snap. Like,
it's just great. But working for AT&T, you were traveling around the country, right?
No. So after when AT&T merged with Singular, ended up leaving, but they had a meeting with this experiential marketing agency that they were working on something with, and I kept in touch with that person, and I ended up going to work for his agency. So then I started traveling around the country doing experiential programs for Victoria's Secret Pink, for Nestle Butterfinger, for PlayStation.
What did you have to do for these companies?
I probably traveled the most for Victoria's Secret and also for this thing called the Techno Overload Tour. The Victoria's
Secret.
Well,
how much techno is too much techno?
No, it was like... It was,
what is overload?
It was, it was techno, K-N-O-W.
Oh.
Yeah,
it was T-E-C-H.
That's a little nerdier than what I was thinking.
Yeah. Misleading. I thought, techno overload is going uptown to Washington Heights. And
that's when you get too much Skrillex.
Victoria's Secret was... they were launching Pink, and it was like catering towards the collegiate girl or whatever. So they wanted to get brand ambassadors on different campuses across the country and to have different campaigns. So I had to go to different colleges and interview hundreds of girls.
What a
I know. Poor Irv. How do you do that and not come across as a scumbag?
I mean, they knew what it was for. They were super nervous. That shit was hilarious to me. I'm just like, yo, it's not that serious.
Wait, did you sit at a desk and like there was a line?
Yeah, honestly was. School would give me like a room to do it in and everything. And they would just like come and, you know, just say why they wanted to do it and what value they thought they could add. And,
are you a Victoria's Secret girl or not? Yeah.
Pretty much, you know. But it was dope. It was fun. I got to go to places that I would have never gone to otherwise. Like Indiana.
Well, you want to know what? Before I was like, oh, poor Irv. Now I'm like, oh, poor Irv.
I went to I went to Austin, Texas. That's cool.
Yeah,
that was the first one I went to.
Did you fly to each of these places or did you drive?
No. Okay. I flew for Victoria's Secret. I was flying everywhere for Techno Overload Tour. We started in Quincy, Massachusetts and drove like all the way to the Midwest and like back, just going to different campuses.
You and who?
Me and like a crew of like four or five.
In a kind of car?
Two cars, a truck, a big U-Haul.
Oh, wow. Like a caravan of cars?
Yeah, we would have to like show up on these campuses. It was dope because the Techno Overload Tour was basically a bunch of electronic companies like featuring like their new latest and greatest products or whatever. So you had like Nintendo, Gibson guitars, like all these different companies. And we would literally like show up on campus at like 4 a.m. and like start setting up all these tents and then demo everything the whole day and then break
it all down. So you had to have like a mastery of all these products.
We all had our designation. Thankfully I was on Segways.
Oh, wow.
When Segways first came out.
Were you dope at the Segway?
I was dope.
Wait. Would you like roll it up into
like riding it all over like the footprint of wherever this was happening.
Oh,
was
okay, crazy. So I've never ridden a Segway. I've ridden the hoverboard.
I've never ridden that.
Okay, ever. So I was going to ask like if it's easier or not, but like
I bet it's the same idea, right?
It's the same idea in terms of body weight, but the bars obviously make it a little bit. You know, you don't have to.
How tricky is it at first? Like getting
it's
on.
It's super tricky. What's the turning radius? The crazy shit is like you don't know how fast you're really like you're in a car and it's like 15 miles an hour, like come on, I can walk faster than this, you know what I mean? But you're on a Segway going 15-20 miles an hour, it's fucking fast.
Yeah, you'll kill somebody.
100%.
Did you run into anyone?
No, I didn't run into anybody. I was hitting reverse and I hit like this staircase or whatever. It was funny more than anything, but other than that it was cool. I got to ride those all over the campus and the campuses and that's it. It was dope. I was more worried for the other students when they were like, oh, I want to try it. I'm like, all right.
Wait, but what were you doing? What were you pitching from the Segway?
It wasn't even a pitch. It was just like, yo, check this out. That's all the companies really wanted, for these college kids to like try their shit.
Huh.
You know what I mean? So Gibson would have like 6 of their new guitars and Nintendo would have their new Donkey Kong game out of like a truck.
You get a little taste. Hopefully you come back and
go buy it.
Yeah, that's how Eric sells drugs.
I lost 97 keys, allegedly.
Yeah.
You have this experience now, you know, in your past at the most successful, you know, rap label that there was at the time. Do you miss that? Do you want to get back into that?
The music industry?
Yeah. Did you just leave it?
Well, at the time, I always thought I wanted to work in the music industry until I was in it. And then I was like, you know what? I don't know, man. I get it now that like you got to pay your dues and work your way up and all that. But like at the time, I think because of the American story and the expectation is like of what you're supposed to do after you get out of college and everything. I was just like, all right, so hold up. I have a degree and there's like an intern, a kid that like interned when he was 16 and has been here for 5 years and now he's my boss. Like,
right. Yeah.
You need to, like, you know what I mean? Like
you needed to segue.
Pretty much. Thank you. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. I like that. I just didn't like resonate with me. I was just like, yo, that's weird. You know, like how do I even explain this? Like, yeah, so I work at this, you know, record label. I don't get paid, but you know, I have a degree and you know, it just didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I just went off into the field and tried to find a job and all that stuff. And my senior year in college, I was going to school full time, interning and working at Nike Town full time. So I forgot her name, man, but I met this lady from Bad Boy. And she knew the dude from AT&T, and that's how I got the interview.
So music industry really did help you get work.
Yeah. It just wasn't even though you didn't want to work in the music industry.
Yeah. And now, I mean, and now it's like, you know, I kind of am in it now.
Right.
Know, just in a different capacity.
Yeah, but like you've combined your two worlds.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, instead of like actually working at Def Jam, working in the building, right. you know, working projects, right. now you're working with rappers in right. a more exciting way, probably, right. and better paid.
Segway life, you're out and about around the whole country.
Yeah, I was. So I did that. So I worked for a couple of beyond that company doing those things. I worked for another experiential company or two, and then I ended up being the marketing director. The director of events and operations for this company called CIN Productions. CIN was doing all the parties at like Deep Sundays, and I was working for them during the big reggaeton explosion.
Yeah.
So they were booking a lot of those acts, and they were packing rooms out, 2,000 people at the Copa or at Latin Quarter, whatever. And the record labels started coming to them and saying, hey, well, you know, you clearly have a pulse on the Latino demographic, you know, why don't you guys help us with like marketing their projects and everything like that. So they needed somebody to come in and kind of nurture those relationships. So then they started looking for a marketing director, and I went in.
You were that guy.
And I only knew about the job because I had gone to their parties and they put it in one of their emails saying that they were hiring, looking for that role. So I went and interviewed and I got it. And so I started working with like all the reggaeton guys.
Tego Calderon.
No, Don Omar.
Yeah.
I worked with Don Omar. I worked with Daddy Yankee. Yeah, hey. I worked with Daddy Yankee. He's a super cool dude. I worked with Wisin y Yandel and a couple mm-hmm. other guys.
That's dope.
Helping them. Nelly Larama Secreta, who produced all the big Noche de Sexo songs and all that stuff. I helped him with his publishing deal and all those things. So,
shit.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Have you seen Daddy Yankee's resurgence?
I've admired it from afar. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I tweeted recently, like, it's crazy how to get has managed to keep the same beat for the past 20 years.
Totally yeah.
successful.
The but same it just, perfect beat.
It shows you that it's like, with that, it's like, it's just all about melody, really.
Yeah. Totally.
You know what I mean? So as long as you can come up with catchy hooks and dope melodies, you'll
And then sometimes you right. have Justin Bieber on them, you know, and you'll have a hit.
That's it.
You know? So you're the marketing director now.
Yeah, I was the marketing director over there. And what I did was I said to them, hey, look, you know, I had this experience from doing all this experiential marketing stuff. And every, you know, a lot of brands are trying to get the Latino dollar right now. So why don't you just let me see if I can, you know, be the bridge between corporate America and the urban Latin demographic. So they were like, all right, have at it. So I managed to get Toyota on board, Verizon, a couple different companies just to like do events and sponsor them.
What was the big like company that like shocked you, and you were just like, you pitch it and they're like yes, and you're like, hold,
Verizon.
Yeah
Verizon was cool.
Is that because you were an AT&T guy?
No. it was just like the way that it all happened. It was like, yeah, I asked for like a ridiculous amount of money. They're like, all right. I was like, okay, fine, cool, no problem. But they were
because you literally wanted to build a bridge between.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, just stack it up. But they CIN was doing team bashes at like X Bar, Jimmy's Bronx Cafe.
Yeah.
So they wanted to get in front of those consumers. So they came in and sponsored some of those team bashes. And
so from there, were you like, this is where I'm going to stay for the rest of my life?
I was there for 5 years. And
so really, yes. Yes, the answer is yes.
I mean, I love those guys. Like, they are now owners of Don Coqui in Astoria.
Oh, yeah.
They own Salsa Con Fuego in the Bronx. So they kind of do something similar, but just different with the restaurant element to it, which makes a lot more sense because it's like, you know, it's a one-stop shop. You go, you drink, you dance, all in the same place. So it's to me, it's a genius concept.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Towards the end of my time there was when the economy kind of went to shit and, you know, everybody was in their homes and bad mortgages and all that stuff. So people weren't partying as much as they were.
Sure. Why not? Seems like the atmosphere was great.
It was like,
everyone saved their disposable income, right?
Bottle rent, you know, what do I do? So, so ultimately they decided, hey, you know what? We're going to switch gears. We're going to go into the restaurant business. I was like, I don't want to do restaurants. I just kind of want to keep doing marketing stuff. So I was, again, found myself unemployed. I did what I could. Like at the end, I actually started like, you know, beyond trying to get business for them and everything. I was like working at the clubs, like doing the door, doing like every facet of my club you could, you know, except bottle.
Yeah.
I was in a bottle.
Right.
Obviously. You know what I'm saying? But pretty much just like doing all those things at the different spots that they had.
So when you're working the door, Are you the guy that's saying, like, you can come in, you can't come in?
They never were like that. It was pretty much...
If you have money, then you can come in.
Yeah. Unless that's you're, like, rule. Dressed like an absolute bum or whatever, but...
Yeah, that's the rules for our apartment, too. If you pay, then you can get in.
Yeah. We don't care. Hard bottoms or, you know...
No.
Like, yeah.
Hats.
Yeah. I was unemployed for a bit. Let's say, I want to say, like, 7 months or something
Seven months.
Like, it was fucking crazy. Thank God I had some money saved up, but when it starts drying up, that's when you start... feeling
the pressure, right?
You know what I mean? And so I ran into a friend at a barbecue, and he was working for Chase. So I just was just like, dude, get me an interview. Like, I don't even care what it is.
Where is your diploma at this point? Like, is
who
it
gives a fuck? You know what's crazy? Yo, dude, you know what's crazy to this day? Like, only one employer, one person who's ever interviewed me had ever asked me for a fucking transcript. So, like, I'm like, wait, you telling me I could have just totally just, like, made this shit up?
And by the way, you can't make that up. They will find you.
Yo, but only one person ever checked. You know what I'm saying?
I was just wild.
Like, but it's cool. Like, for me, it's, like, it's dope to have and know that I got through that. You know what
I'm
saying?
But even though
you don't need it, kids.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But even though you didn't have, like, any background that would be, like, relevant to Chase, they were still, like...
Not only that.
Yeah.
Besides getting that A-, you were not great at math.
No, I wasn't, but I was competent enough. I was good. See, I was good with, like, adding and subtracting money and percentages and shit like that.
Yeah, that's
what it is. Like, here's the thing about working at a bank. It's kind of like when you are walking down the street, you see a Chase Bank, whatever, those are considered retail. Right? Mm-hmm. That's not corporate. That's retail. So, you know, they have you take an online assessment or whatever and ask you all these, like, hypothetical questions. Like, if there's a stack of money in front of you, would you take it?
I don't know that I get this job.
Like, they would ask you, like, shit like that, and then you have, like, the math component, and it's not easy, but it's not, like, super hard either. So as long as you pass that, you're good, and then you go for your interviews, you meet with three different branch managers, and...
Well, what kind of position are you trying out for here?
It was just a personal banker.
Yeah.
So I got the job. I was a personal banker at the Chase on Astor. Across the street from the Starbucks by the Cube.
Yep.
So, you know, just opening accounts for, like, a bunch of NYU students and shit. Like, it was pretty easy, and you get commission, so I was like, all right, I've always... any sales job...
I hate how easy you're making this banking shit seem, because now, like, our mom is going to listen to this and be like, well, why didn't these two yokels, you know, become bankers?
Well, you know what it was? I always tell, like, my younger cousins and just any young person that I talk to, like, I understand retail is the most flexible when you're going to school, but fuck that. Work retail that has commission. Like, why would you work retail if it's not with commission?
So don't work at the Starbucks.
I mean, I wouldn't say that, but if you had, like, those would be the first places I would go to. Like, if I had to do it all over again, I'd be like, yo, Bloomingdale's women's shoes, I want to sell.
Right.
Macy's women's shoes, I want to sell. Like, go for commission. Like, get, you know, something in addition to, you know, whatever your hourly wages or whatever. So,
but what about hip hop sketch comedy?
Well, I mean, there's commission in that. So something,
there's not, but it's fine.
So you get the job.
I got the job, and I was there for, you know, I was a personal banker, opening accounts, whatever, making commission. You know, I was all right. I was happy, but, you know, it got to a point. So there's different, like, partners, they call them, in the bank. So you have your loan officer, you have your investment banker, you have all these different people. So I got cool with the mortgage banker at my job, the loan officer, and this dude was just raking it. Like, he was such a super chill dude, very nice. So I liked him on a personal level,
right.
But he was just killing it. Like,
if you left like a stack of money in front of him,
he wouldn't have taken it.
He wouldn't have taken it.
No. But what happened was, so everybody started losing their homes. Obama came through with this program that allowed people to restructure and refinance their loans. It was called the Home Affordable Refinance Program. It was a streamlined loan. All you had to do was, like, show pay stubs and shit for, like, 2 months, and they'd be like, okay, we're gonna adjust your shit so you don't lose your house, which was awesome.
Yeah.
People were beating down the doors trying to get their shit done, and this went on for, like, 2-3 years. Like, it was great.
And so that's how this guy is making his...
So he was... listen, man. Like, yo, good money.
Yeah.
You know? But you would never know it, and that's what I loved about him. He wasn't, like, you know, this, like, braggy kind of guy. Like, he was just, like, totally chill about it, you know,
right.
Hardworking, you know, family guy. So he was like, hey, can you know, can you help me? I had an interest in real estate. I just always, my dad's dream was always to buy us a house for the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I took an interest. You know, after he passed away, I just started like looking at that stuff. Cause I remember like he was, you know, always talking about it, always wanted to buy a house. And he was waiting on like some money to come in. Like he was just like, one day, man, one day. So I started paying attention to that stuff. So because I had an interest in it, when I saw how he was doing it, and I was just like, yo, let me work with you. Cause we would get referral commission. So anybody that sent to him that did a loan or whatever, I'm caking. So he was like, yo, I'm gonna give you all these leads, call these people, whatever.
Holy shit.
And then it got to a point where I was like, yo, dude, I need to make as much money as you're making. I was like, yo, introduce me to your boss or something. He goes, yeah, next time he comes in, I'll introduce you. His boss was like, yo, if you refer him 10 mortgages for the next 3 months, I'll make you a mortgage banker. I said, bet. Done. Killed it.
Easy.
So I was only a personal banker for 11 months total. He put me in training right away, and then I was like, within a year, I was a mortgage banker, and that shit was insane. So I made more money than I had ever made in my whole fucking life. I was like, yo, this is crazy. But I saved a good majority of it, and, you know, it came to a point where I missed doing something marketing or event related or experiential, I should say. And that's when I started doing, you know, Brunch Bounce on the side.
Oh, see, we could have been interviewing like a mortgage banker this entire time.
It's way more interesting.
You're like, I left my job, you know, getting all this money. And meanwhile, like, I'm learning a lot about mortgages, which I never knew about.
You're doing all right now.
Yeah, I was doing all right. Yeah.
You're comfortable.
Yeah, I remember the first time, like, the first check that, because they think, the mentality, there's their research or whatever, their numbers show that, you know, people that start off as mortgage bankers, they don't know the ropes, so they don't make as much money. But they had that formula for like traditional mortgage banking. Like, what was going on at that time was not traditional in any way. Like, right, that whole refinance shit was, it was awesome. It was, yeah, great. It was I helped a lot of families from losing their homes and just like, you know, getting their mortgage payments down from like $6,000 a month to like $2,000 a month, like, wow, something normal.
Yeah.
You know? So shout out to Obama.
Yeah. Shout out to Irv.
Yeah. So I was helping these people with all these things, but I was just like, yo,
how do I help myself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how do I feed the inner experiential guy, you know?
And what was the answer?
So yeah, I started, I just said, you know, I was hanging out with some friends uptown, and we were looking for somewhere to eat. And I was at that, like, around that time, I was hanging out in LES, not LES, in the Meatpacking District, and going to like these daytime like brunch parties and stuff. And then one day I was hanging out uptown and there was nothing of the sort. So I was with a friend at a bar, and I was like, man, it would be dope if there was like something like the downtown scene up here. And he was like, yeah, it would be dope. And I was like, yeah, that guy over there looks like the owner. He goes, yo, go talk to him. I said, all right, cool.
What made him look like the owner?
He just was standing by the POS, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just like punching numbers away. He just had that like owner kind of swag to him.
So what do you say? I mean, like, and by the way, you're a guy who sold Verizon on, like, you know.
Yeah, I've never been, like, when it comes to, like, business, I'm not usually shy or, yeah, mm-hmm, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think
But what promises can you make to this guy?
I was there all afternoon waiting for something to open up, like, so we can go, you know, drink, eat, have a good time or whatever. And I just pitched him on that fucking void. I was like, yo, you have nothing going on. I can definitely bring some people up here to hang out and drink and consume. So it's ancillary money for you. Like, why not? And he was like, all right, just shoot me an email, whatever. Let's talk about it.
Did he appreciate the fact that you said you have nothing going on?
I mean, it's not, it wasn't a slight. It was the truth. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, you, like, look around, it's just empty. Yeah.
So I was like, yo, look. I emailed him.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, we got to take a break because of
no problem. So I basically emailed the owner the same thing that I had told him in person. And he was like, all right, let's try it out. So 3 weeks later, threw a party, Memorial Day weekend, 2012.
Oh, it's a big weekend.
Yeah, man. So I just, you know, pretty much just invited people that I knew, like, just word of mouth, like, yo, come through, ask some friends to DJ. And, I mean, the first event my fucking tab was like $97 and we made like $125. It was hilarious.
Well, you know. Yeah.
But I didn't care because I wasn't like, I had a job.
Because you were building something. You know, that's
not
right.
Even. It wasn't even the intention, to be honest with you. It was just, yo, let's just, you know, my friends were all, you know, everybody's like getting older, doing their own thing. And like,
these
not
are
hanging
your
out
friends as, from home or these?
Just friends, like people that I knew, like, you know, like.
Yeah.
Just my brother would be like, yo, bring so-and-so, and so-and-so will bring so-and-so.
And you're like, come uptown?
Yeah, come uptown. Let's come hang out.
And it went off, no problem.
Had a good time, great day, and so much
would
so.
Would you say it was the greatest day?
No, not yet. Not yet, my friend.
Is this like the spark that...
That wasn't even like... I was just like, all right, that was fun. That was cool, you know? And I was like, let's do it again. So we did it again the next month. They didn't have a kitchen at the spot that I did it, so they actually got...
Oh, he really had nothing going on.
I told you.
Yo, but you're a sucker for waiting for food.
No, I totally am. But just it wasn't even like that one venue. It was like the whole like Dykeman Strip for the most part. Like, they stopped serving brunch at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the fuck?
You wanted something.
Yeah, you want a brunch as an all-day brunch.
Typically, it goes, what, 10 to 5, right. 11 to 5. Yeah. You know, that's what I was used to. You know, you go to like Le Bain, like they had that once a month party on a Saturday on the roof, and it was like, you know.
Yeah, swimming with sharks or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You'd be there to like 5, 6, 7 o'clock or whatever. And that's what I was used to, you know. So the next party, they had to get it catered from a restaurant next door. So the dude was like, yo, it wasn't as busy as the first one. And he was like, yo, I didn't make any money, so I can't pay you. I was like, yo, look, man, I don't care about money. I'm good.
Right.
I just give me $100 or whatever to like pay a DJ or whatever. And it was more so the principal. Like, sure. Yeah. So he was
right. You're
like,
putting
nah.
in the work. Like, it should be
like $100. Yeah. Like, I asked him for $100.
He
like,
said
seriously.
No.
He said no. And since then, I have never set foot in that venue again. Like, friends have had birthdays and be like, yo, it's my birthday. I'm like, word, that's what's up. I'm there, definitely. Where's it at? Not going.
No.
Do you stand outside?
Nope, not even. I actually, you know what? I've just passed by, and I've actually seen the dude, and I'm just like, I'm not going in, not acknowledging you. Not
yeah.
Because I just thought that was mad petty, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Of course.
$100.
So after that, where are you going to take it?
I left it alone, and then I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, Jose, and he was like, yeah, whatever happened to that party you were doing? And I was like, the guy was being, you know, a bit of a jerk, so I just left it alone or whatever. He goes, well, I'm DJing at Apartment 78. You want me to just talk to that Jose and see if he'll, you know, let you do it over there? And I said, yeah, talk to him, see what's up. And he did, and he said yes. And so I said, all right, cool. Did my birthday party there as the first one.
So now you're a known entity, right?
Like, not where, really, because I had only done
Jose, who's like, yo, I know Irv can bring a certain something.
Exactly. Which Jose?
So, yeah, all the Jose's. Jose's, right? No, there was, damn, that was like
Tahiri Jose,
Spanish, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, think of your friends. There's Felix.
I know, right? Yeah. So, had only done two at that point, but yes, it was somewhat known. He knows that I can bring at least, you know, Apartment 78 wasn't even all that big, you know.
Right.
So the first one did as my birthday, went well. Did it again the next month. Another two friends' birthdays went well. Did it again in November. Got busier and busier, and it was like one friend would tell another and another, and then before we knew it, it was just like packed.
And when did you coin Brunch Bounce as
from
the
beginning
name? Oh, for real?
From the beginning. I just called it that to indicate that it was a day party.
Yeah.
You know, that's really...
Well, that's the brunch part, but how'd you get the bounce?
Man, I just, you know, just went together. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, all right, cool. This just kind of rolls off the tongue,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah. How do you move from this weekend sort of side hustle mm-hmm. to it becoming your real job?
2012 started... Just did it pretty much once September came around, which is when my birthday is. We did it every month, and it came to a point where the biggest problem that we had was space. So the marina was
La looking, Marina.
La Marina.
Yeah.
La Marina. My bad. Yeah. My bad, dog. My bad. You would know better than I would.
That's mad white of you.
So, yeah, La Marina was looking, had a date open, and they were like, hey, you know, do you want to do anything to, they asked the owner of Apartment 78, he presented it to me, and I was like, yo, let's do it. So we went from doing 250 people, and that first time we did La Marina, we did 2,000 people.
2,000?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was a good
time. How many Jose's were there?
At least.
Actually, how many Joe Buttons were there?
Joe Budden is dope, man. Like, you guys got to leave that guy alone, man.
No, we love
Joe. I feel like I understand him in a, like, I guess in ways that most people don't understand him.
We love Joe.
We love Joe. We Joe.
Joe's cool, man.
It's Joe Budden and Mac Miller that we've worked with the most over our decade-long career. So. Yeah.
You guys have been on his podcast, right?
We've been on his podcast. He's been on our podcast. Dope. He's been here for our...
sketches.
Yeah, sketches. We did like three of them with him.
We've interviewed him for MTV. It's funny watching him
on Everyday Struggle, because if you listen to his podcast, you understand him on Everyday Struggle better. But I think that most people either watch one or listen to the other, so they don't really get it.
That's a lot of Joe Budden
content.
You know what
I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. But even with the whole Yachty thing, I was just laughing, because I was just like, yo, Joe's argument style, you guys haven't picked up on it yet. And I'm just like, well, he's
isn't
just,
his argument style just loud?
Well, that's one thing, but he's just, call it passionate.
It either goes like really loud or like real soft.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But Irv, if you think about it.
Dan?
What's up, Dan? How
Dan
are you?
Irv.
What's up, man? But if you think about it, if Yachty would have just been like, I'm happy most of the time.
Right.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have been an argument.
Right.
He said, I'm happy. He said, no, you're fucking That's just crazy, man. That's just so funny. But,
so.
But yeah, Joe actually came to, what was funny is one day he tweeted, I've never crowd surfed. And I said, really? I sent him a video of him crowd surfing at apartment 78. That shit was hilarious. He was like, whoops, forgot about that. Yeah, he was there.
Oh, man.
He was totally there. He was totally just chill. Like, always, you know. Being low,
but
as low key as possible.
But 2,000 people.
Yeah, La Marina.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a legitimate thing. Are you? Yeah. Are people like coming because of the reputation or because of the name or because of?
I had a rep at that point because apartment 78 at first didn't have a deck outside, and eventually he built a deck. So by the time springtime came around, like, we were able to get even more people in there. Air quotes legally.
Yeah. Shout out to all the fire marshals out there.
Guys, people knew about it. I mean, there were memes on the internet or whatever. Like, you know, it was hilarious.
There's a lot of parties that go on in New York City. What do you think defined yours? What made it different from all the other ones?
It was just super non-pretentious, you know, super inclusive, very wide variety in music. Our format, the format that we put in place was, you know, we would bring up 7 to 8 DJs and put a different DJ every hour.
Wow.
And we'd program it according to, you know, how many people we thought would be there at certain times and what the, like, kind of like what the vibe of the day should be. Shout out to you. I know that you are.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the acting director at this point?
I curate vibes. I would say I'm the assistant manager of vibes. We've had a rough couple of months at the company, but I am still I'm managing myself, and I'm managing vibes as best I can.
Good luck, my friend.
Yeah, thank you.
So we would just like program it that way, and literally, if you came from the beginning of the party to the end, you would hear such a wide variety of music. Like, we ran the gamut, like from start to end, and that was
what
different.
What DJs were you coming? Were
it was all the homies. So we had Schoolboy, Ozone, Mr. Notorious, just like dudes that were playing New York, like on grinding it out on the weekly basis, just playing different spots. Like, nobody, you know, we didn't book any DJ like of stature until like 2014 when we did the first Greatest Day Ever.
Yeah.
But it was more so about the environment, and it was super organic. And at that time, not that that word has been like ran into the ground, but it truly was, you know, one friend telling another and bringing another. And it was awesome. It was great. I met so many amazing people that I'm still friends with to this day. There are people that are having a kid now that met there, people that got married.
Wait, they had kids at the party?
Not at the party, clearly.
They were conceived. And then,
I mean, there was a lot of practice that came out of there, you know?
So, like, Brunch Bounce was the thing now. And
I was still working at Chase at the same time. It was still like a side
Did they thing. Understand, like...
I didn't tell anybody.
No one knew about it?
Nah. There was one person that worked eventually, like, I went to different branches, but there was one person that worked in my branch that
that was cool.
She came she came to the party, and I saw her. She's like, wait, this is your thing? I was like, yes.
Did you come with Joe Budden? Was she Dominican?
She was. She totally was. But yeah, like, I didn't make anything of it.
How did you transition from Chase to a full time gig?
Did you go out in a blaze of glory?
I mean, it got to a point where I just wasn't, like, I would find myself at work thinking more, like, it just became very monotonous,
right?
You know, fill out applications, same questions, where are your tax papers, blah, 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 get an appraisal. It's like super monotonous.
And then when you would present those same questions to everybody at Brunch Bounce, like, you were just like a more, a better atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Much better. You know, it just wasn't like doing the mortgages and stuff. Like, it was cool, helped a lot of people, but it was just weren't where my passion was. So I found myself at work thinking more about Brunch Bounce and what I wanted to do next and where can I take it to next than anything else. So, you know, I was at Chase from quote unquote 9 to 5 or whatever till 7, whatever, and then get home, eat, and then like work on Brunch Bounce related stuff till like 2-3 in the morning. You know what I'm saying? I just would never really talk about it, not even online. Like, I honestly think to this day that if I didn't have like Brunch Bounce in my bio, you wouldn't know that it was me. You know? And that's fine. That's great.
You're like Batman, and like,
you're not the hero that we wanted, but you're the one that we deserve.
Yeah.
We don't all wear capes, man. So fast forward 2014, I had an idea during one of the, it was like a snowstorm or something, and I said to my girl, I said, yo, you know, a lot of different parties were happening here in New York City, and I told my girl, I was like, man, it would be dope if, you know, we just like all had this one massive party, like a super party, like, you know.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that'd be great. So I stepped to different people and different movements and was like, hey, you know, what do you think about this idea? Here's my proposition. I'll put up all the money for this.
Like, it's like a super group.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put up all the money for this. If we take a loss,
sounds more like Ocean's 11, to be honest.
You, I was going to say it's like Slaughterhouse.
Yeah, like, it is like Slaughterhouse.
Joe Budden. Yeah.
The proposition was, if we lost money, they didn't have to come out of pocket, and they also didn't have to put anything in to start it up.
What are they bringing to the table?
Well, more so helping spread the word and getting to their respective movements. You know,
but you didn't think you were going to lose money.
I didn't know.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But I just live kind of by the whole, I mean, my mantra is like, I just don't want to ever see myself, I guess, like 20, 30, 40 years from now, looking back and not having done the things, like lamenting things that I should have tried or attempted to do or whatever. So I just always been like that.
Do you think any of that comes from your father's early passing?
100%.
Yeah,
definitely. My pops died when he was 45.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, and he was like, it wasn't like he was like, you know, bedridden or whatever. Like, it was just like, boom, from one day to the next. You know what I mean? So you kind of, you know, just, I don't take life for granted at all. You know what I mean? So I just definitely want to, I've literally have tried most of the things that I've wanted to do from a standpoint of like just things that I've aspired to do.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried them all, you know. So going back to the greatest day ever, which is what, it wasn't called the Super Party, which is what we were initially going to name it, but it was the greatest day ever. It went, you know, better than I expected. I mean, we sold,
it was the greatest day ever.
It definitely was. We sold 3,000 tickets in like an hour when we first announced, without a location, without a lineup or anything.
Were you worried about like the website going down?
I thought the ticket site had crashed because 7 minutes into it, we put 1,000 tickets up initially. Mm-hmm. And
you were like, the number must be wrong.
Well, no. People started calling my phone like 5-6 minutes into it and were like, yo, there's no tickets. It doesn't work.
And you were so, like, you have to be the 97th caller. 1-800-223-9797.
Yeah, I thought that the thing was down. And then I called the person that was handling the tickets, and they were like, you know, they're gone. And I was like, what? And so I was like, yo, well, add more. People are trying to buy right now. So we kept adding more and added 3,000 total. We sold 3,000 in like an hour and change. So that was awesome. Yeah. And then getting close. That was in, I think, February or March of that year. And then in May, like a month before the event, the venue we were going to have it at didn't get their liquor license.
Oh, so
and
that's, I was just like, that's not great.
Nah, that's not so great.
How did you find that out?
I was at a meeting for something mortgage related, like on Park Avenue, and a friend of mine said, yo, I was doing some snooping around trying to figure out what this was, like where this place might be, and she came across and she's like, you probably know this, but I'm sending you the link anyway. And I opened the link. It's an article in the Daily News saying the name of the venue had lost their liquor license, whatever. And I was like, what? Like, the venue didn't even call me. I did not know this. Thank you. Yeah. And I left immediately, went home, started freaking out, took the next 2 days off, and started calling like every venue in New York City.
Were those the greatest days off?
No, they weren't, man. They were fucking terrible, man. I was freaking the fuck out. I called, I mean, I can tell you the capacity for everywhere in New York at this point. Like, I know.
How many
like,
people could you fit in our apartment?
Here? Yo, you could do a dope house party here. I think there's good.
It's a lie.
150.
Hey, shut up.
You can totally do 150. Move this table. You're good.
We'll call Jose.
Where am I gonna move this table to? There's no space
into the hallway.
Collapse
it. So
I called.
Well, what's the biggest venue you looked at in this time?
By the way, you really are bad at math.
Me?
150 people in here? No way.
Yes, for sure.
You could fit 12 people comfortably.
Nah, man. Come on. You guys are way too modest.
What's the biggest
venue? In a mansion, y'all. Don't get it twisted.
What's the biggest venue you looked at in that time?
Called Yankee Stadium.
Called Yankee Stadium.
Definitely Daddy Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. Called Yankee Stadium. We were going to do it on the Intrepid. the New Balance racetrack uptown.
Man.
Shit. Like armories all over the city.
What were the issues presented for getting it on the Intrepid? The USS Intrepid.
The challenge was that they would let you do an event if it was...
patriotic.
No, if it was in the evening, like 6-7 o'clock around there, they didn't want to like shut down the whole museum on a Saturday. I'm like, why not?
The whole point is a day party.
Like, come on,
you can call it brunch bounce at night.
I mean, we do parties
after
like
hours.
That.
Hours.
Yeah.
After hours.
Well, it was so
that's sort of grown and sexy, right?
It works.
Hard
I like
bottoms,
it.
No hats. Yeah.
We actually have a party called Night Bounce. But yeah, we called everywhere. I really wanted to do the Intrepid though.
Yeah,
like I really wanted to do that.
But
like,
ended up getting.
So the last four, like I was ready to like, you know, just quit and just cancel it or whatever. We had 5,000 tickets sold at that point, and I was like, y'all find somewhere. And then my friends were like, yo, just give it up, forget it. Like after the first day, like yo, just it's just not gonna happen. And I was like, wait, one more day. And then like towards the end of the day, I was like, all right, like this is fucking crazy. The last phone call that I made were these dudes in Brooklyn, and they were like, hey, we can accommodate 400 here, but we think that this is worth a conversation. And they called me back in like 15 minutes, and we're like, hey, so we are producing the Northside Music Festival, and we have 50 Kent. And they have dates available. They don't have the date that you have, but are you all right with moving it perhaps to like July? And I was like, yo, that's better than canceling. I'm like, how many people can I do max? They were like, yo, 7,000. I was like, all right, 7,000. Cool. Fine.
No problem.
I didn't know how the public was going to take it, if people were going to be pissed or whatever. All said and done, we had to give out like 350 refunds, and we sold like 7,000 and like 50 tickets or something like that. So
great day.
Technically 7,300.
But was it the greatest day?
I definitely would say so.
Yeah.
Like that was fucking awesome. And after that went off, that's when I decided to quit my job.
Were people at that point, because 7,000 tickets is like a lot of tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Do they know what DJs are playing? Like,
I think it was like a month, we said who was playing, we mentioned the location and all that
and
stuff, which
playing.
Ultimately, to be honest, I don't fucking remember. Like, it was like Nick Cash Dubs, Roxy Cottontail, a couple of our DJs. Damn, who the hell else was there? And the reason why I don't remember is because the original lineup...
Molly.
Say again?
Because you were on Molly.
No, man, I don't fuck with that shit. We initially had Just Blaze, then we lost him because we changed the date and he was going to go do wireless in London, or he was going to do somewhere in Europe or something like that.
He's on your two-way?
Oh, we had Pete Rock too?
Yeah.
That was awesome? Nah, man. We had Pete Rock.
Whoa.
He killed it. He was fucking great.
I bet.
A couple other people, man.
That's dope.
Yeah. It was dope. And then at that point, I was just like, you know what? If we, like, ultimately was able to make it happen, in essence working part-time, if you will, because like there were certain calls that are difficult to make if I'm like in the middle of like closing a mortgage and I gotta like okay, hold up, agent,
right.
You know what I'm saying, or potential sponsor, like can I call you at like 9?
What I mean, did you invite any of your clients to the part? No.
Nope, nobody.
So full-time, and you become a real company.
Yeah, so right then and there I said, you know what, this went over well. I think that I owe it to myself to kind of see what I can do with it if I dedicate myself to it full time, 24/7. And so, you know, we just
how's that worked out?
Pretty good so far, I'd say.
You're bigger and better than ever. You have been consistent. What haven't you done with this?
We haven't yet done it, but we're going to, which is go to Europe. We're doing Paris.
Wow.
August 5th. In St. Denis, France.
Official?
Oh, no, it's official.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's definitely happening. We're doing a day party out there, which is
fucking
awesome.
Do they know what they're in for?
I hope so.
Do they understand what brunch bounds means?
I'm going to translate it.
Yeah, French. It's like déjeuner.
But yeah, I'm excited about that. We definitely want to do more West Coast stuff. So we have an event out there in, we're doing something in June. We're doing something in August as well. And we want to do Vegas. We want to do a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
a whole bunch of stuff.
Right? We definitely want to do more. Like, I want to do London. I want to do Berlin. I want to do Amsterdam. I would love to do somewhere in Asia also. So those are the things that, you know, at this point I'm focusing on. And I think that with the greatest day ever, this year was already taking another step in making it 2 days as opposed to one. So the greatest.
Have you announced the location yet?
We haven't announced the location.
Okay, but yet. Tickets are on sale.
Tickets are on sale at thegreatestdayever.com. And I'm excited for the lineup. We have Diplo, we have Dylan Francis, The Internet, Post Malone, They, Goldlink, Kyle.
Yep. Oh, DJ Esco.
DJ Esco also, Bro Safari, Anna Leno. We're bringing in these dudes from Brazil that are awesome. Killers. West Side Gun and Conway also.
Can you fit everyone into these 2 days?
100%. Yep. Definitely, man. We have so much space, and we also have last 2015, we had 2 amusement rides. This year, we have 5. We have all the carnival fare also.
It's a real carnival.
Yeah. Do you have a liquor license?
Of course. Everything.
It's not of course. No. There were years when they
might not have happened. Yeah, man. We definitely do everything.
Yeah, tickets are available right now.
Right now.
Thegreatestdayever.com.
Yes, sir.
And it's the biggest and the best of all of them, right?
Yeah, this is going to be our biggest event to date.
Would you say that it's a techno overload?
No, definitely not, man. It's super well balanced, man. It's super well balanced. There's literally something for everybody. I mean, we have They and The Internet, 2 awesome bands. You know, with Post and Esco and Goldlink, Kyle, you know, it's awesome. Diplo, Dylan Francis, you can't.
All those artists sound great, and if you brought Joe Budden, it would be the greatest day struggle. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with Into the Real. Jeff, if people want to find out more about us and this podcast of ours and our live show on July 26th at Highline Ballroom in New York City, where can they go?
You can always go to soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time. You can also go to iTunes, search for A Waste of Time with Into the Real. We are also on Spotify for our music and iTunes and Google Play and everywhere else where you want to find music. We are there. You can also go on Instagram at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Twitter at It's The Real, Snapchat. We are It's The Real and It's The Real Eric because It's The Real was taken. And I believe that is everywhere you can find us. Yeah.
Google us. It's The Real. One word, no apostrophe, no spaces. Actually, we met Memphis Bleek the other night.
Yes.
After we saw Casanova. And Bleek was like, oh, It's The Real. My girl and I watch that program every night.
And we were like, well, I don't think that you're watching us because that is the women's talk show you're thinking of, not.
So when people think that we make this stuff up, it's actually true. People think that we are The Real. We're It's The Real. Come see us live. Bleek? Maybe Bleek will be there.
Maybe Adrian Bailon will be there.
Listen, Memphis Bleek doesn't know who we are until we spread the word, so who would you like to tell?
I want to tell Randy Rodriguez, Spanish Ram,
hey,
from Rock Nation.
We saw him at the show.
Yes, we saw him and Casanova and Memphis Bleek all together.
That's right.
I want to shout him out. He's been a loyal listener and a guy who, every time we see him, apparently, he's been across the room and has not said hi. Finally, we were able to say hi.
Shouts to him.
Really good dude. And
yeah, he really appreciates all the industry podcasts because he actually is
in the industry.
In the industry. And in these streets.
Yeah.
I would like to shout out Jeff, Lenz Anderson, at Lenz Anderson on Instagram. He came to New York for
Governor's Ball.
Gov Ball. And he was nice enough to hit us up and say, yo, if you guys have any time, I got my camera with me. I'm here taking photos. I would love to shoot you guys around the streets in New York. And we went down to Chinatown and had a dope time running around, just, you know, jumping on fire hydrants, going into.
Yeah, people were, like, really mad that we touched a phone booth.
Oh, yeah, okay. So we took a picture. at
a bunch of
payphone that still exists down in Chinatown.
And everybody was like, you need to get tetanus shots, you need to get, you know,
life together.
Yeah, all that.
And so, Jeff, how you feeling?
My leg has gangrene, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
Well, I mean, but was the shot worth it, though?
Shot was worth it.
Shout out to Lenz Anderson.
Yeah, you got to do it for the gram, you
he's
know?
He's a great photographer. He shot us, he shot Currency, a bunch of other people. Go check his Instagram out, at Lenz Anderson. And if you live in L.A. or you want to fly him out anywhere, he's a dope photographer, a dope dude. Shout out to Lenz Anderson. Guys.
We're back next week.
We are back next week. In the meantime, go to itsthereal.com. Get those tickets right now for the Highline Ballroom. It's The Real, A Waste of Time Live, July 26th. Not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We will see you guys next week.